This is KUOW's The Record. I'm Bill Radke.
It is very likely by the end of Mr. Trump's first term, the North Koreans will be able to reach Seattle with a nuclear weapon on board an indigenously produced intercontinental ballistic missile.
That is the former head of the CIA, General Michael Hayden, predicting that by the end of Trump's first 4 years in office, North Korea could reach Seattle with a nuclear weapon. On Monday, the president-elect tweeted, "That will never happen." So which is it? Could North Korea conceivably reach Seattle with nuclear weapons and soon? Or not? I asked the president of the National Bureau of Asian Research, and first, Richard Elling said it's easy to see why North Korea would want to target us.
Oh my gosh, we are the, except for Washington, D.C., the best target they could have. Not only are we the shining city on the hill with all these amazing companies, we have Boeing, one of the most critical defense contractors. We have JBLM, the Joint Base Lewis-McChord, whose main purpose down there, I-Corps, is to reinforce the peninsula, the Korean peninsula, in the case of invasion. We are the ultimate strategic and symbolic target.
This week, President-elect Trump tweeted, quote, "North Korea just stated that it is in the final stages of developing a nuclear weapon capable of reaching parts of the U.S. It won't happen!" Exclamation mark. How do you react to that Trump tweet?
Well, Trump's been fascinating in this regard. From the point of view of Asia policy, he really has taken some new roads from past administrations. The first thing he's done is more clearly identify that China is the key to any resolution of the nuclear program in North Korea. My view is that there's no way in negotiations, since North Korea is so important to China, and just in pure negotiations without any change in the strategic picture, I see no chance of China exerting the kind of pressure on the North that we want. On the other hand, if we do deploy on the peninsula and in the region a robust missile defense system at some juncture, my view is that China will see this, of course, as a defense against what they can do as well. So my view is the only way you're going to successfully have a diplomatic solution to North Korean nuclear forces is if we beat them in a strategic sense with our own.
So when Donald Trump tweets that this North Korea capability, it won't happen, you're saying he's right. Not because it couldn't happen, but because you think Trump won't let it happen. Trump has said that the U.S. should expand its nuclear capabilities. And that's not what presidents have been saying in recent decades. Do you want Trump to restart a nuclear buildup and an arms race?
Well, we wouldn't start it. We're the only ones not doing it. So the Russians and Chinese have been modernizing and building like crazy. And we also have a robust modernization program that has recently started. So it's not true that the world is at rest in the nuclear realm. It's absolutely the opposite. So for the first time since the Cold War, we're responding now to developments, particularly with China, but also with regard to Russia in this realm. That's a separate question from the Korean Peninsula issue to some extent. Except that the one worry I have, the real nuclear worry I have, is at some point a Chinese threat deployment and threat to use enhanced radiation weapons on places like the peninsula or in the common areas, the seas, in which nuclear weapons are imaginably used because they kill people and not things, and the radiation is short-lived.
This is a neutron bomb, a radiation attack.
That's correct.
It's not an explosive attack.
That's correct. And that, to me, is kind of the in-between and most dangerous nuclear issue we've got. It's never talked about because it's too imaginable.
What's the downside of such a muscular policy toward Asia?
You know, we have...
Because a nuclear arms buildup, that's a scary-sounding thing.
Well,
I know you're saying it's happening.
Sure, and that nuclear arms buildup is not so much just numbers of warheads and so on. It's effective defense systems. It's thinking about and what do you do about enhanced radiation weapon defense. It's about how do we make it clear that we can predominate in the common areas. I mean, there's so many issues with regard to defense in Asia. But let me just state it this way. We've not been participating, almost in no way, and Japan has not been participating, in this one-sided arms race that's been taking place for 30 years. In the last 25 years, China's defense budget has gone up a minimum of 12 times, and corrected for inflation. And the same for Japan is it hasn't moved.
But even if such a buildup thwarted North Korea, couldn't a nuclear arms race, more of one, make us less safe in general in other ways? What's the downside?
The lesson of the Cold War is that the more there was credible second strike capability, that condition of MAD, mutual assured destruction, the more that was clear, the more there was a break on major power confrontation. And while it's a horrible thing, again, to think about, we have to remember, but this has been the condition now since the 1950s, and it persists. So I'm not so much worried about, I'm worried about threats to MAD if we didn't have it. If we minimized our forces so much that we weren't credible in a second strike, that'd be a disaster. But so it's not so much just sheer numbers, it's what do we do about defenses to make sure that there's leverage, that we are credible, especially to our allies.
But what about the effect of even less stable countries getting nukes as we embrace nukes more than try to step away from the age of nuclear weapons?
Yeah, my contention is that the two greatest challenges to humanity are somehow dealing with the challenge of the rise of another nationalistic authoritarian power and avoiding world war. That's the number one challenge to humanity. The other challenge to humanity is with the proliferation of nuclear weapons, which is a done deal. I mean, it's out, right? It's out of the box. We've utterly failed in everything we've tried to do to stop the proliferation of nuclear weapons. As the numbers grow, the chances for use grow. There's no question about that. I don't have any good answers for you.
So to sum up, what do you want? You believe that the possibility of a North Korean missile attack, a nuclear missile attack, multiple missiles in Seattle, that's a real enough possibility. And you want our listeners, who that's who President Trump works for, and our members of Congress here in Washington, you want us to think and do what?
You know, this is, I testified about a month ago before the House Foreign Affairs Committee, the Subcommittee on Asia-Pacific Affairs. And it was fascinating. We had, I think, I detected bipartisan agreement. There was unanimity that we need to deploy THAAD. And
remind us, if someone was just tuning in, what's THAAD?
That is the anti-missile capability aimed at intermediate-range missiles on down that the South Koreans, and we have agreed to deploy in South Korea this next year. And by golly, we better do that. And of course, what we have right now, as I said, brewing in South Korea, enough political uncertainty that we don't know that we're going to be able to do that. That, to me, is a huge problem because there's no leverage. Without deployment of THAAD, we have no leverage. China will feel no pain, will feel no incentive to do what it's been doing otherwise forever, which is maintaining the North, sustaining the North as a problem for us and as a buffer.
And are you feeling good about our incoming commander-in-chief?
With regard to Asia policy, given the people he's appointed so far, General Mattis, for example, who's very capable. General Mattis is extraordinary. I'm sanguine.
Sanguine. Regarding North Korea, you think Trump has the right stance?
And with regard to China.
To China.
You cannot talk about North Korea at all without talking about the rise of the principal authoritarian power in the world in this century. I think one other thing that we all need to think about are the analogies between our time today and those periods just prior to World Wars I and II. There are too many similarities. We have to think real hard about, of course, in this case, how we avoid large-scale conflagration.
No world peace?
Humanity has not changed. We're flawed. And the old rules of international affairs, as I think Putin and Xi Jinping and others teach us regularly, the old rules still pertain.
Happy New Year, Richard.
Nice to be here.
Richard Ellings is president of the National Bureau of Asian Research. Here's based here in Seattle. He is based here, and we'd like to hear your reaction to his take on nuclear weapons and Asia. We can discuss right now on Twitter at KUOW or write to us here at The Record. Our address is record@KUOW.org.